evening. In the news tonight, the attack on a school in Pakistan, food shortages in Syria and the Central African Republic, the crisis in Flint, Michigan, and a new project looks at use of force by police departments across the U.S. With these and other stories, I'm Linda Perry in New York, and this is some of the news for Wednesday, January 20th, 2016. Pope Francis addressed the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. He told members of the world's wealthy political and economic elite that they should not be deaf to the cry of the poor, that they must consider their own role in creating inequality. This comes on the heels of a report by Oxfam, which says that 1% of the world's population owns 99% of the wealth. He addressed the theme of the conference, which is mastering the fourth industrial revolution, saying new technologies such as robotics must not be allowed to replace humans with soulless machines. According to a new report released at the World Economic Forum meeting, attention should be paid to plastics, which are overrunning our oceans. By 2050, the oceans are expected to contain more plastics than fish by weight. The plastics industry is expected to consume 20% of total oil production and 15% of the annual carbon budget. The report outlines a fundamental rethink for plastic packaging and plastics in general. It's available online at weforum.org. Search plastics. In New York City, a plan is on the table at the New York City Council to impose a 5-cent fee on plastic bags at grocery markets. This would cut down on the city's plastic consumption. In Washington, D.C., a 5-cent fee has already reduced single-use bag consumption by 60%. In international news, Islamic militants stormed a school in northeastern Pakistan. The deadly attack lasted for hours. At least 20 people were killed and 23 were wounded in the assault at the Baka Khan University in Charsada before the four gunmen were slain and the military declared an end to the siege. Two teachers were among the dead. This includes a chemistry professor who was praised as a hero for shooting back at the attackers and allowing some students to escape. Malala Yousafzai says she is heartbroken by the attack. The young woman was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize after, as a teen, she was shot in the head by Taliban in 2012 outside her school in the Swat Valley because of her vocal support for gender equality and education for girls. The violence shows just how vulnerable schools remain in Pakistan, where extremists have sought to prevent Western-style education, especially for girls. In Syria, the state-run news agency and opposition activists say some 500 displaced families have returned to their homes. This in a neighborhood on the southwestern edge of Damascus. Syrian authorities tout the truces as part of the government's program of national reconciliation to end Syria's conflict. It has killed more than 250,000 people since March 2011. Meanwhile, a UN agency, FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization, says the conflict in Syria has decimated the agriculture sector. It has had a major impact on food supplies and markets, Daniel Dickinson reports.
Currently, over half of the Syrians remaining in the country are food insecure, with one in three people unable to afford basic foodstuffs. Dominique Bourgeon is the FAO Emergencies Chief.
Prices have really skyrocketed. Some prices have been multiplied by 300%, by 600%. So the combination of production and access is leading to a situation where the number of food insecure people is tremendously increasing.
FAO has appealed for $87 million US dollars to support 3 million people within the country. In February, an international donors conference is being held in London, England, to mobilise support for humanitarian work in Syria. Daniel Dickinson, United Nations.
And there's also a growing food crisis in the Central African Republic. Half of the population is facing hunger. That's nearly 2.5 million people. Deanne Penn reports.
3 years of intercommunal violence and insecurity in the Central African Republic have led to limited access and availability of food. The World Food Programme, WFP, says not only do people not have enough to eat, they are forced to consume food that does not meet their nutritional needs. The agency says citizens have reached the end of their rope, with families being pushed to sell their belongings, take their children out of school, or even resort to begging. A WFP emergency food security assessment finds recent harvests were poor and food prices remain high as fighting has kept farmers from tending their fields. The UN agency is providing emergency food and nutrition support to the most vulnerable citizens. It is also giving a boost to the local economy and livelihoods, for example, by purchasing food locally for its school meals program. However, WFP says it will need $41 million to respond to urgent needs through the end of June. So far, operations are less than half funded. Deanne Penn, United Nations.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York.
I'm sorry most of all that I let you down. You deserve better. You deserve accountability. You deserve to know that the buck stops here with me.
Michigan Governor Rick Snyder apologized to Flint residents for their lead-contaminated drinking water in his State of the State address on Tuesday evening. He pledged to take new steps to fix the city's drinking water crisis, starting with committing millions in state funding and deploying more National Guard members.
If any, once you make a mistake and it blows up nationwide, I mean, of course you're going to say the right thing.
Flint resident Eric Woodyard.
Talking is not. You've known about this almost 2 years. Why is it coming to this now when people in the city of Flint have been telling you about this for almost 2 years now? This is like, it's like the media attention is making people act upon it. It shouldn't be like that. I mean, you shouldn't want to just develop this plan and do all this now because now the pressure is on you so tough. It's the news has broke internationally. Now, if the news didn't break internationally, would you have done this? I'm not sure you would have. So I don't feel like it was sincere because it's only happening because the story has gotten so big.
The crisis began when Flint switched its water supply from the Detroit system to the Flint River in April 2014 to save money. Complaints about the water began within a month of the switch, but Flint did not return to Detroit water until October of 2015 after tests showed elevated levels of lead in tap water and in some children. It was the Michigan governor who appointed the emergency manager who switched the drinking water to the corrosive Flint River water in 2014 to save money. The Michigan ACLU points out that here you have a political appointee who makes a decision which affects a community without democratic accountability. This allowed the emergency manager to raise the financial bottom line above all else. The ACLU says the lack of checks and balances in these largely African-American communities makes this a civil rights issue. Meanwhile, Flint residents are managed the best they can.
Although the water has been switched, it's still lead-filled pipes. So to go through the pipes, it still has lead in the pipes. So, to fix the problem, it would probably take everybody's pipes to get fixed.
Eric Woodyard was born and raised in Flint. He's a sports reporter with the Michigan Journal. Woodyard's mom and grandma live in Flint's inner city.
And my son, I have a one-year-old son. I have a one-year-old nephew and a five-year-old cousin. They're over my mom's house at least 5 days a week. My mom washes their clothes. My cousin brushes his teeth. My nephew brushes his teeth. Sometimes I take showers over there. I'm over there like every day, you know, visiting my mom and stuff. So the water looks clean and clear, you know, and it's not like how on TV how they show the dirty looking water in every home. So that's kind of even scarier because even though the water looks clean, we don't know the effects of it. You know, we know some of the water has lead in it or whatever, but like I say, not every household has that dirty-looking water on TV, but that doesn't mean it's not lead in. So it's like it might be tempting for some people to still drink it.
Woodyard says in Flint, you can't get around not using the town water, even though residents are using cases of bottled water. He says it's great to see the city's water issue finally getting the nationwide attention that it deserves, but it shouldn't be used as a hashtag to get more likes or as a trend.
And I'm not blaming celebrities or anybody because we appreciate all the support they do with open it up to their platform, but we've been dealing with this issue for almost 2 years now. I mean, people have been trying to bring a light on this issue. It's not like this just happened overnight, you know. I feel like some people just like to jump on the bandwagon, ride the wave of, Flint, this hashtag, you know, Flint water crisis, and, you know, I would like people to really think about what this means and the lives that they're affecting and all of the sacrifices and accommodations we have to make to have safe water for our children and for our community. So, I mean, like, I just hope that the celebrities that are trying to do this are not trying to do this for a publicity stunt or a pat on the back because, I mean, it's just something that's very serious. It's a serious issue. It's not just the latest trend. that's going on. So, I mean, hopefully people are sincere and really willing to help and not just donate water, really get to the bottom of the issue, and it's not just giving water. I mean, that's just like a Band-Aid over, you know, what's going on. We still have corroded water, even though they are switching it back. We still have bad pipes in everybody's household.
Flint's 100,000 residents are unable to drink unfiltered tap water. Meanwhile, protesters are calling for the Michigan governor's resignation. Flint Mayor Karen Weaver, who met with President Obama, spoke at the U.S. Conference of Mayors in Washington, D.C. today. She said resources are coming to Flint, but they are not enough.
So one of the things we know has to happen is to hold the state accountable. There's money there, and Flint needs to be made a priority about how these funds are distributed. This is something that nobody should have to deal with. Everybody should have clean water. And it's just a travesty when you know, it's ironic when you live in the Great Lakes State and we don't have access to clean water. So this is something that it continues to be a disaster for us because we don't know at which point we will be able to drink the water yet. And so I hope other cities from around the country take note about what has happened in Flint. Start monitoring what's going on with your water, the infrastructure, and don't let this happen where you live.
While the Flint mayor refused to call for Snyder's resignation, she says investigation should go forward. She says she wants Snyder to give Flint the services and the money, the funds that they need to address the population. And Mayor Weaver says the situation in Flint would not have happened in a different community. She agreed with Hillary Clinton, who in Saturday's Democratic debate commented that response wouldn't have been as slow in a wealthy Detroit suburb.
That is something that we believe. You know, it's a minority community. It's a poor community, and our voices were not heard. And that's part of this problem. Like I said, this has been going on for almost 2 years, and the citizens, the community, spoke out about this shortly after the switch was made to the Flint River water, and nothing was done. And they marched, and pastors got together, and it wasn't until Mark Edwards and Virginia Tech came in that people even started listening to what we were saying, and then our medical community spoke out. That was a year. That took a year for us to be heard. So I was glad that she brought this added attention to this and made that comment. And that is why also the state and the national NAACP got together and put out a statement as well, because this is a civil right. Water is a basic human right, and everybody deserves clean water.
And the mayor was asked, who do you blame?
The buck stops with the governor. We know that, but there is fault to go. You know, if we want to start pointing fingers, there's enough blame to go all the way around. That is absolutely right. One of the things I have decided to do with my energy and with my time is let the investigation show us who knew what when, because I've got to focus my energy on making sure the people of the city of Flint get the resources that they need.
At the mayor's news conference, a Black Lives Matter organizer, April Goggins, held up a sign in front of the mayor's as they spoke. It said, 16 shots and a cover-up, hashtag Laquan McDonald, hashtag resign Rahm. She was referring to the Chicago teen gunned down by police and the cover-up and delay on the release of video evidence by Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel until his re-election. After the news conference, she said reforms don't work. She wants the mayors to stop investing in police and instead to invest in Black communities. Meanwhile, Campaign Zero has launched an examination of use of force by police departments throughout the country. With contributions from activists, protesters, and researchers, Campaign Zero has created a data-driven platform. It says its aim is to end police violence. What they've found is that police departments' use of force policies often fail to include common sense limits on how and when police use force against civilians. Most police departments across the U.S. don't have policies which require officers to de-escalate situations or refrain from using life-threatening moves such as chokeholds. Fewer than half require officers to intervene when they witness another officer using excessive force. And several of the nation's largest police departments, including New York City, don't make their use of force policies public. For more on this, go to useofforceproject.org. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Wednesday, January 20th, 2016. The news was produced with help from Daniel Dickinson and Deanne Penn at the United Nations and Reggie Johnson at WBAI's Brooklyn studio. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry. Thanks for listening.